You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora. So, if you didn't know, over the past 8 years, New Zealand has been doing all these negotiations to get some great trade deals, which is passed on Sunday. So on Sunday, we finally signed off on the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or the RCEP, it's a bit of a tongue twister, that one, trade deal, which is with the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, plus China, Japan, Australia, and South Korea. So basically, some people in New Zealand are pretty stoked about this and will benefit from it, and then some people in New Zealand are a little bit mad about it. So I didn't really understand too much about trade. James, did you have your head around this when it all came out in the news?
No.
Yeah.
And
no.
I study international business and I still don't really get trade. It's complicated.
Yeah. So hopefully, I've looked into it this morning and I'm hoping to get some understanding. Some things to note before we fully get into it is that this deal was signed with 15 Asia and Pacific countries, which is almost a third of the world's population. But it was also negotiated behind closed doors, which means New Zealanders didn't know what was being agreed on until it was already signed and didn't get the opportunity to have too much of a say, which is pretty much the same problem that Kiwis had with the TPPA trade agreement, you know, a few years ago when all the protests happened. And the final thing to note is India is not part of this trade deal they pulled out. So basically, it would be pretty awesome economically if India was part of it. But they pulled out and the rest of the countries that are part of it, we already have free trade agreements with. So heaps of people are asking what the point of signing onto something that could potentially restrict us when we might only get 0.3% increase in GDP. So it's just some things around it. I talked to the man of the job, which is Minister for Trade and Export Growth, Damien O'Connor, and here it is. Morena, Damien.
Morena, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Can you explain to me why these trade deals are negotiated behind closed doors?
When you have 16 countries starting out, representing half the world's population, there's a whole range of objectives from the different countries. They're in different stages of development, and they're looking for different things from an agreement like this. And so it's a really challenging task to reach agreement on, to a point where, you know, everyone feels as though there's benefit for each of them. We all, of course, have to compromise. We set out with ambitions to, you know, sell a whole lot more goods into the countries, and we had to moderate our ambitions, as many other countries have done in other areas. India, for example, you know, would like to ensure that, you know, a lot of people can move from their country out into other countries. And, of course, they all have immigration policies that say, you know, we need careful migration so that people have got houses. And so, you know, the objectives of those 16 countries, as you can imagine, are quite different.
Now, you mentioned India. I understand that they have pulled out of this trade negotiation, which is one of the major pull factors for New Zealand wanting to be part of it. Why did New Zealand continue to stay in this deal once India pulled out?
Look, this is a set of rules that gives us all certainty when we're engaging with, as I say, a third of the world's population, with over 50% of our existing exports. The best part of this whole thing, and it was always going to be that, was the certainty around an agreed set of rules. And so while India provides a huge opportunity for goods and services and investment, you know, they made the call that at this stage they weren't ready to engage, but actually all the other countries have signed a declaration saying, look, the door's open to talk with India at any stage, because they, as they develop their export economy, will be looking for certainty as well for their exporters. So we kind of agree on the principles behind this, but people are at different stages of development. And Japan, you know, had other issues around uncertainty, China, but we all got to the point where we've agreed on these rules, and that's a great benefit for a small trading nation like New Zealand.
Now, it's my understanding that we already have trade agreements with the majority in the RCEP. How does this further what agreements we already have? How does it bring further benefits to Aotearoa New Zealand?
Well, because the trading among the countries in the RCEP area and Asia, where we've engaged, then that is more certain. So we know what are the rules between countries. Many of them have FTAs, but this is an overarching set of guidelines and rules that is once more a step in the right direction, when around other parts of the world, people are bringing in protectionist measures, saying trade, we don't need trade, we don't need to engage with other countries. We do as a country, and the more countries that buy into that as a philosophy and as an objective through WTO and other multilateral trade agreements like that, then the more secure New Zealand can be in growing our nation and benefits from trade.
There have been concerns that entering into these trade agreements with more rules and regulations for our government may restrict the government in taking action, as we have seen it's done fantastically with the COVID-19 response. What would you say with the impending climate crisis and the need in the future for government, New Zealand government, to be able to make strong, fast decisions? What would you say to people that are concerned that trade agreements like this may restrict those movements?
Well, they haven't, and there are some bottom lines for New Zealand and our trade agreements and negotiations. One is the Treaty of Waitangi, and our obligations are there. We absolutely retain the right to legislate for our obligations there and for settlement. And we also have Protected Farm Act, which is a quite unique international model for pharmaceutical purchase and distribution, and we've retained the right to put in place laws for environmental management, for labour management, and for social protection of our social structures within our country. So those are bottom lines that we have to, you know, negotiate through, and we have to hold the line on it. But what it's offered us is opportunities in other areas. So this is overall a huge step forward for us as a trading nation.
So it's been 7 years in the making, and now it's come out. It looks to be bringing $2 billion into our economy, or 0.3% to 0.6% of our GDP. How will we see this money come through in our New Zealand economy?
Well, big percentage of our people employed and of the flow-on benefits from that connect to our exports. And it's both in services, supplying education through into these Asian countries, which we're doing more of, actually selling goods. The flow-on through our economy is huge. And so the calculation of $2 billion was done by a separate enterprise. What we have found over the years is that any assessment like that is actually undershooting what is finally delivered. And again, it's the security for exporters, saying if we develop this product, we know the rules going to these countries, and we can get on and develop and grow our exports. And it's that certainty and security that is the greatest benefit, and it's actually very hard to calculate. And I'm sure we'll do far better than $2 billion overall as we progress through to ratification of this agreement and then, implementation of all the rules.
Finally, I just want to ask, how can the government make more transparent trade deals in the future? Is there any plans for the government to be able to make it more transparent for the people of New Zealand?
Look, our policy is always to be open and transparent, but we're dealing with countries that, have sensitivities around other areas, and they don't want it all to be openly negotiated, which we respect that right, and we could either walk away or we could stay in the agreement. And what we will be doing now is, of course, the agreement is tabled in Parliament. It will go to a select committee. People will have the opportunity to submit on this, and we'll see all the reasoning for our decisions. And if people have major issues, I guess that's something they can, take up with government now or into the future. But in the end, the agreement is one that has been hard fought, and we believe is worth the effort and will be open to everyone's scrutiny.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thanks very much. Anytime.
So I'll translate that last question, his answer for you, from politician speak. Basically, no, there are no plans to make it more transparent or to involve the community in any more ways. So that was Damien O'Connor, the Minister for Trade and Export Growth, about the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, RCEP, deal that was signed on the weekend. He made it sound pretty good. It's all politicians tend to do. And I have spoken with someone that doesn't think it's all that chill. It's our future spokesperson, Edward Miller. Here he is now. So the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or the RCEP deal, has just been signed, and now New Zealand is suddenly trying to wrap our heads around what it is, because it was negotiated behind closed doors. So to talk with me a bit more about it, I have the our future spokesperson, Edward Miller, on the phone with me right now. Hi, Edward, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me here.
No worries. Great to have you. Now, you think this trade deal could hinder our COVID recovery. Why do you think this?
Well, these deals are basically designed to constrain policymakers from being able to have the freedom to do what they need to do. I mean, we've seen with COVID that governments can and will actually take some quite radical measures in terms of safeguarding people's health and safeguarding the economy, protecting jobs and all of that kind of thing. But to do that, you need quite clear open policy space, and these trade agreements are designed to prevent that policy space from existing. So it's supposed to be a safe jacket for regulators.
The negotiations happened behind closed doors, and do you think that negotiations for trade should change in the future?
I mean, yeah, during the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiation, the TPP, which many of your listeners will know about and may have marched against, we railed quite strongly against these secret negotiations for a number of reasons. I mean, one, the basis of democracy is knowing what it is that you're signing up to, and we didn't know that. But also because there's major implications, and we needed to have a discussion about what those implications meant for New Zealand, how it would play out, and that hasn't happened. You know, we thought that the new Labour government would be a change in that direction, but we're still doing these deals behind closed doors. Workers, communities are not getting the say on the kind of trade deals that we want to be negotiating.
So it happens behind closed doors, and then it could restrict government's movements in the future, especially as we try and grapple with the pandemic, a health crisis, and also the impending climate crisis as well, where governments need to be able to make decisions quickly. But how does a trade deal stop governments being able to take action on these issues?
There's all sorts of rules inside these trade agreements. I mean, this is a more than 1,000-page document that has rules on things like government procurement, has rules on intellectual property, has rules on e-commerce, binding them. All of these things can hinder the ability of a government to act in the public interest, which is why that we need to stop signing up to these deals.
So it is going to bring in around $2 billion into our economy, which is only a 0.3% increase in GDP. New Zealand as a whole will not see this money equally. Can you please tell me a bit more about this?
Well, the economic modelling is very dicey. It's very difficult to work out how much money will start going, will accrue as a result of this. It's all very speculative, and we're talking about fractions of a percent very, very far in the future. It takes a couple of decades before these tariffs and non-tariff barriers are removed. We really don't know where that money is going to go, but it's most likely that the biggest players in the market or the biggest players involved in each supply chain will benefit more. It's going to be companies, not workers, that get the best outcomes from these agreements. I mean, the dirty secret of trade liberalisation is that most tariffs have already been removed. New Zealand removed most of its tariffs voluntarily a number of decades ago. So we're fighting over very, very small scraps in terms of the actual economic benefits of these agreements. And those scraps are not going to working people. It seems like an absolute waste of the last 7 or 8 years of negotiation to keep pushing this model of neoliberal trade integration when we could start consulting with workers, start consulting with unions, start consulting with community groups about what they want to see. There's nothing in this agreement to do with labour provisions. There's nothing in this agreement to do with environment protection. There's nothing like that at all. I mean, aren't these the things that we as communities, as New Zealanders, value?
Although it might not bring in that much money into our economy, is it still important to you that New Zealand has a seat at the table with the rest of these countries?
Yes, but we have seats at all sorts of tables. I mean, we have ongoing negotiations and discussions on all sorts of things with these other countries. The reason that that the trade negotiators at the moment are saying that it's important that we have a seat at the table is because the deal, the offering, has been actually so bad that they're trying to wrap it up as something that benefits us in some way. We still trade with the rest of the world regardless of the RCEP, regardless of the TPP, and we still get benefits from that trade. These deals don't do anything except for magnifying corporate power, and until we start having that discussion in an honest and open way, we're going to keep seeing secret deals that sell away the national interest without consulting people.
Finally, I've got one more question. How do you see trade deals operating in a more transparent way in the future?
Well, we could have the text available before they're signed. We could go to our communities, we could go to working people, we could go to environmental activists, all those people that are raising concerns about these agreements, and ask them why and try and factor those into the negotiations before they get signed.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Edward. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much.
That was It's Our Future spokesperson Edward Miller talking to me about the TCEP. No, the RCEP. Almost
quite the acronym.
Quite the acronym. It's the CE part that I get mixed around. The RCEP trade deal that was signed on Sunday.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.